So if you've been with us the past few weeks, you know that we're in a series called Jesus in the Everyday. And so we're walking through the book of James, and it's the super practical, down-to-earth book of the Bible, right? And so if you've been with us the whole time, you know we're in the end of James. If you're just joining us, this is your first week, that's fine. This is definitely something you can just kind of pick up as we go along, and there's going to be plenty that we can glean, even if you haven't been with us for these first three sessions. Before we get any further, I thought I should address some thoughts some of you might be having. Maybe you realized I have a little bit of an atypical pastor attire going on here. Some of you are like, maybe I noticed. I already like started an email draft to you and Adam and the bishop and the church board. Like, we need to get a dress code going on. Maybe some of you are on the other end of the spectrum, like, she's the youth pastor. What can we say? They always do weird stuff, right? And if you're on that camp, you're not wrong. Youth pastors do a lot of weird stuff. But usually, I'll speak for me, I don't know if I can speak for Brian, but usually, there's a purpose behind them, right? So, I promise you that there's a reason that I'm dressed like this morning, and as we go throughout our morning, it will become clear. But like I said, we're in this series called Jesus in the Everyday. And so, I've known about the series for a while, and each week when the title comes up, I just get this image in my mind of everyday clothes. Did your family have everyday clothes? Maybe you called them something different. I'll explain what I mean. So in the family I grew up in, you had like your good clothes, and that's what you wore when you went to school, and you had your church clothes that you wore when you went to church, and they were like your nice clothes, right? And then you had your everyday clothes, and it might look something like this. They might have some tears, some paint smears. My sneakers are wearing out a little bit. But those are what you wore on Saturdays, because Saturdays in my house, I don't know if this is relatable for your family, was like, everybody get up and get outside because you're doing some work. And so you put on your everyday clothes. And what happens to these clothes as they get used, as they get dirtied up a little bit? That's the point. This is the proof that these clothes have done their job. Everyday clothes are intended to see some action. And that's what our second half of James 2 that we're going to read this morning and talk through, that's what that is about. It's about Jesus in our actions. And so we're getting down to the practical, everyday stuff, the tasks that we do or don't do every day. And I believe James is telling us that our faith isn't about this collection of beliefs that we dress up in nice clothes on Sunday and leave it there. James is telling us our faith is supposed to be in everyday clothes. Our faith is an everyday thing. So as I'm speaking this morning, just consider me a life-size visual aid, right? Our faith is a faith of the everyday clothes. So we just heard our passage, James chapter 2, verses 14 through 26, read for us by Emelina just a few minutes ago. But what I'd like us to do during our time together here is to read through it again, chunk by chunk, and just make sure we really understand what James is saying. And then after we understand it, obviously it's about action, right? So we're going to talk through maybe some things that keep us from taking action based on what the scripture is asking us to do, and some things we can do to start taking action in the right direction. So, if you'll read with me, this is starting in verse 14. What good is it, my brothers and sisters, if someone claims to have faith but has no deeds? Can such a faith save them? And I want to make sure that we clear up any issues about the source of salvation, right? Because if you're just reading this, maybe you're like, wait, what does save me? What's the deal? Or if you've been around church for a while, you might think, well, I'm pretty sure there's places that Paul says it's not about the works, but James is going to say it is about the deeds. And so I just want to make sure we're clear on, hey, where does salvation come from and how do works play into it? Because there's kind of things that if you read them separately might be a little confusing. So Ephesians 2, you may have seen it on the screen before the service. It says, for by grace you have been saved through faith. This is not of yourselves. It's the gift of God that no one can boast. And that's what Paul is writing, right? And he says, listen, if you confess to believe in Jesus, if you believe that God raised him from the dead, that is what saves you. Your belief in Jesus is all that's required to have saving faith. Great. So then what's Paul doing when he's saying, like, it's not about works? He's warning people against works that are fueled by your own human effort. His audience was like, oh, well, do I still need to avoid certain foods, or do I still need to get circumcised? Do I still need to do all these things that the law required of me before? And Paul is saying, no, those kinds of works, the works that are trying to live up to salvation, you don't need to do that. That's not what it's about. But James here, when he's talking about deeds, he's talking about something else. He's talking to kind of a different group of people, these people who used to be Jews and then have come to realize that, yes, Jesus is the way to salvation. So they understand, I'm not working for my salvation. I'm not trying to earn God's favor, but what I do. And there's freedom in that. But sometimes the pendulum can swing too far in the other direction, and you can get to the point where you're saying, well, I'm saved no matter what I do, right? It doesn't really matter. And James says, no, deeds play an important part in our faith. He's exhorting them to have works that come from obedience to the gospel. He's not talking about the source of their salvation, but he's talking about the result of it. He's saying that when you have a saving faith, it will always result in good deeds. So if there aren't good deeds, then it must not be saving faith. So hopefully, I know it's all still a little convoluted, but hopefully we can understand that Paul and James aren't in opposition when they're saying these things. They would both agree that your works are not the thing that are going to save you. But when we read on, James is going to explain the role that they do play. Charles Spurgeon, I think, summarizes it really well. He says, the grace that does not change my life will not save my soul. So the actions prove that there is saving faith. Moving on to verse 15. Suppose a brother or a sister is without clothes and daily food. If one of you says to them, go in peace, keep warm and well fed, but does nothing about their physical needs, what good is it? See, our Christian faith isn't just a faith that's supposed to be concerned about the spiritual things. It's also supposed to be one that's concerned with the everyday, with the physical needs of the people that we're encountering. It's not about the verses that we can memorize. It's not about, like I said, our Sunday best. It's about the interactions that we have with God and with people on a daily basis. And sometimes we can get stuck in this idea that it's what happens at church or that it's about what we believe, which is important. What you believe is important. But sometimes that can cause us to overlook God's command to care for people's physical needs. David Guziak says in the Enduring Word commentary, we sometimes pray as a substitute for action. When needs arise, we should sometimes pray less and do more to help the person in need. And that might seem crazy. You're like, what? Pray less? Can you say that in church? But, in fact, in 1 John chapter 3, verse 17, he says, if anyone has material possessions and sees a brother or sister in need but has no pity on him, how can the love of God be in that person? So we see that he's directly linking our beliefs, our faith, our love of God with our actions and love of other people. St. Basil, he's from the 4th century, and he says, when someone steals another person's clothes, we would call them a thief. Shouldn't we give the same name to someone who could clothe the naked and does not? The bread in your cupboard belongs to the hungry. The coat unused in your closet belongs to the one who needs it. The shoes rotting in your closet belongs to the one who has no shoes. The money which you hoard up belongs to the poor. You do wrong to everyone you could help, but fail to help. So we read verse 16, and we have to ask ourselves, what good does my faith really do? What positive impact does my belief in Jesus have in the world? See, because doing nothing to meet this person's physical needs, like James is talking about, that doesn't just reflect our relationship with that person. Not only are they going to think we're a jerk, but it reflects our relationship with God. James says, if we live out that attitude, if we say, be warm and well-fed, but do nothing, then our faith is dead. And he explains this a little bit more in verse 17. Oop, what good does your faith do? Ask yourself. All right. Verse 17, in the same way, faith by itself, if it is not accompanied by action, is dead. And I'm sure you already know this, but there's a really big difference between something being dead and something being alive, right? If I promise your kid that I was going to get them a pet goldfish, and Saturday is the day, right? And so I show up on your porch on Saturday, and I have my little bowl, and I have, like, the pretty colored purple, pink, green gravel in there, and I have the fish food, and it's awesome. And then I just, like, pop up in a can of anchovies and dump them in there, sit it on your shelf. It's only going to be a few minutes before we have a situation on our hands, right? Your kid's going to be like, Mommy, why is my fish not moving? What's wrong with my fish, right? There's a big difference between something being alive and something being dead. And although they might not know why or how to put it into words, they know that when a fish is not doing what a fish is supposed to do, something is up. If you are into science, you might know that there's these seven characteristics that you need for life. And so two of these things include the ability to respond to your environment is one, and the ability to grow and to change. So if you're not responding to your environment, if you're not moving, if you're not active, if you can't grow and change, that's a bad sign. Without those two things, there's no life. And so just like those motionless fish, when our faith isn't active, when it's not responding to our environment, when we're not responding to needs, we should realize that there's something wrong. James says our deeds, our works, aren't just this little add-on to a faith that make it better. He says deeds are a matter of life and death in our faith. They are the substance that prove the authenticity of our faith in the first place. So I want us to remember that living faith always results in action. We're responding to the world around us. It's resulting in love for God and in love for others. And we look at the example of Jesus, and we see that he does this beautifully, right? He came to the earth as God and as a human, and he has this relationship with God, and a huge part of his ministry is preaching the gospel, right? He's meeting people's spiritual needs. He's instilling faith in people. That's awesome. But it's not just that he preached the gospel. What else did he do during his time? He's healing people. He's eating with people. He's talking to people. The relationship that he had with God incited active, loving relationships for the rest of the people around him. So we'll talk a little bit more about what this means as we follow through the rest of our verses. Verse 18, someone will say, you have faith and I have deeds. Show me your faith without deeds and I'll show you my faith by my deeds. So this verse makes me smile because it seems like James already knows that someone's going to try and like get out of this, right? They're like, well, how about we just split it up and do half the work and I'll cover the deeds thing and you cover the faith thing and then together we'll be fine. But James is clarifying and he says, look, when it comes to faith and deeds, it's not one or the other. It's not a choice. It's not that you can be like, oh, I'm a cat person and you're a dog person, or I'm a deeds person and you're a faith person. It's not about your personality or your temperament. It's not about having the gift of service or not. Has anyone ever said like, oh, that person stacks the chairs, they must have the gift of service, but I don't really have that gift. No, the Message paraphrase, it says this verse in a way that I think brings the point across very clearly. It says that faith and deeds fit together like a hand in a glove, right? A glove can't do much on its own without a hand to fill it and give it life, give it motion. So if our faith is just like a glove, if it's a passive object, if it's a thing that we come to and attend on Sunday morning, or something that we learn and stockpile knowledge but never do anything with, we're definitely missing something. James says faith isn't just this inward, spiritual, invisible thing. True faith is always going to work itself out in the way that we live day in and day out. There's this saying that faith is like calories. You can't see them, but you can definitely see their results. We understand that, right? We can't see somebody's faith, but we can see the results that it produces. See, our faith deals with our beliefs, right? What we believe about God, our saving faith that we talked about, being willing to believe Jesus came, died, rose again, that's all important. But others can't see the beliefs that are inside our head or inside our heart. But our deeds are the relationships that we have with other people. How we treat our neighbor, that's something that people can see. That's something that people can understand. And so I know there's people in our church family who are already beautifully living out this intersection of faith and of deeds. You're mowing people's lawns, and you're going out to get groceries for people who can't go out right now. You're installing air conditioners. You're making phone calls. You're sending cards. You provide transportation. You're sacrificing of your time and your resources to show love to other people. That's combining faith and action in these everyday ways that James is talking about. Thank you. That's awesome. Keep doing that. But if the things I said aren't describing you, then I think James is saying, hey, it's time to up your game, right? It's not just their job to do that, and I'm just going to pray, or I'm just going to wait for somebody else to meet the need. It's on all of us. He says, if you have faith, I want you to show me by what you do. Pastor Paul David Tripp says, if good theology doesn't result in radical changes in the way that you live your life, it's actually bad theology, right? We can have all the right ideas, but when it doesn't get down to the practical everyday stuff of life, what good is it? So when we take the message of James to heart, an attitude like, oh, I have faith that God's going to take care of that, can turn into, God, what do you want me to do to take care of that? And if you're feeling like, okay, maybe there is more I can do, maybe my faith is feeling a little dead, it's flatlining here, what are some things that I can do? How do I show my faith with my works? And maybe you don't know where to start. I would say, first of all, just open your eyes as you go through your day, right? God will show you people who have needs that you are equipped to meet. Or maybe it's contacting Daylene, our care pastor, and saying, hey, are there needs that this church knows about, even within our family, that I can be serving or meeting? Or somewhere like Echoes on Washington Street in E-Town, or the Water Street Rescue Mission. There's a ton of places out there already doing good work. It's not like you need to come up with a 10-point plan to save the world. There's plenty of people doing God's work, and we can just ask how we can join in. So don't be daunted if you're like, oh, I should step up my game. James told me, / Melita told me, to step up my game. Just reach out, look for somewhere, and God will show you a need that you can fill. Moving on to verse 19, it says, you believe there's one God. Good. Even the demons believe that and shudder. I read this again as another reminder that our Christian life isn't just purely intellectual. It says the demons have a faith in God, right? But is that a saving faith? Are the demons saved? No. Their faith doesn't go any further than recognizing that God exists. Theologian A.W. Tozer says, the devil is a better theologian than all of us, and is a devil still, right? His knowledge, his beliefs in God to that degree cannot save him. So if faith isn't about belief, what is it about? I think James would say that faith is an act of willful obedience. It's about this relationship between God and you and God and others. The willful obedience is the key. Because in Matthew 7:21, Jesus says, not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but only the one who does the will of my Father who is in heaven. And he continues, you foolish person, do you want evidence that faith without deeds is useless? And I'm like, yes, James, I would love some examples. I don't want to be called foolish, but I guess that's just how things go. Sometimes we get offended by what he's saying of like, hey, if you didn't get it yet, you're foolish, but I'll give you some examples. Thanks, James. So he gives us these two examples, and they're kind of different, so I want us to pick out some different lessons we can learn from each one. The first one, verse 21, was not our father Abraham considered righteous for what he did when he offered his son Isaac on the altar? You see that his faith and his actions were working together, and his faith was made complete by what he did. And the scripture was fulfilled that says, Abraham believed God, and it was credited to him as righteousness, and he was called God's friend. You see that a person is considered righteous by what they do, and not by faith alone. Like, whoa, hold up, James. You were just talking about like giving people food and clothes, and I can get on that train. I'm good with that. That's pretty simple. Now you're talking about giving up an entire child? Like, what are you talking about? Maybe this faith thing is a little more serious, a little more all-encompassing than we think at first. If you're not familiar with the story of Abraham and Isaac, in Genesis chapter 22, God says, take your son, your only son, whom you love, Isaac, and go to the region of Moriah, sacrifice him there as a burnt offering on the mountain that I will show you. And this is Abraham's son that he had waited for and prayed for, and God had promised him this son, right? And now God is saying, sacrifice him. Abraham was willing to give up the most precious thing in his life for the simple reason that he had faith. He believed God. Abraham needed both. He needed the faith and the works. He needed a faith that worked. If he had never believed God, he wouldn't have done that work of obedience when he was asked to offer Isaac. Instead, he was willing to listen and to obey whatever task God asked of him. And so if you don't know the story, don't worry. He did not go through with the sacrifice. God provides a sacrifice in its place, and we're going to talk about that in just a second. But Abraham had to have faith to believe God, and he had to be willing to go through with this sacrifice. He was willing to do it. He had the knife raised, the scripture says. Because if he wasn't willing to do the deed, if he wasn't willing to follow through, his faith would have been void. So from the example of Abraham, we learn this. Living faith is revealed by our obedience to God. Our faith is proved to be living and useful to do good when we obey God. Let's look at the second example in verse 25. In the same way, was not even Rahab the prostitute considered righteous for what she did when she gave lodging to the spies and sent them off in a different direction? So Rahab's a little different. She wasn't one of God's chosen people, right? She wasn't like one of these godly people that we think we read about in the Old Testament. She was a Gentile, but she heard about the power of God, and she decided, yes, I believe that this is the one true God. And because of her belief, she took action to help these Israelite spies that came to her door. Rahab showed her faith in God by loving and serving the people around her. So from Abraham, we learn that living faith is revealed by obedience to God. From Rahab, we learn that living faith is revealed by love for others. If we believe God, we will help his people, even if it costs us something. When our faith leads to works, God is glorified. David Platt says it this way: when we trust in God, and as a result of our trust, we go out of our way to sacrifice and spend our lives for the sake of needs that are important to the heart of God, that is a great work that brings glory to God. And so James closes out the chapter with this statement: as the body without the spirit is dead, so faith without deeds is dead. So, quick summary. True faith is alive and moving. True faith is going to lead us to act in obedience to God and in love for others. And that's awesome. Now we have our brains wrapped around what he's saying, but I don't think the hard part is understanding what he's saying, right? You could have known all that without the, 20 minutes I just spent talking to you. But the important part, the harder part, is the doing, the putting into practice. And I came across this meme. Yes, I follow a youth pastor account of memes. I don't know what that means about me. But it's talking about this idea, this tension between knowing good and doing good. And the caption says, it's 100% possible to know all the right answers. That's orthodoxy, the little framework we see. But conduct yourself in a way that none of that knowledge guides how you live. That's orthopraxy, which is the tree just doing its own thing. We read the Bible and we come to Sunday school and we build this framework for our spiritual life that sounds good, but then sometimes, like this tree, our actions kind of start going their own direction. John Ortberg says, we try and get people to trust Jesus for eternity, to get them into heaven. They have these right beliefs, but without teaching them to learn to trust him for their daily lives. So I read this whole text in James and I'm just thinking, okay, what keeps me from putting this into practice? If the important part is action, if this series, is this sermon is about Jesus and our actions, then what keeps me from obeying? What keeps me from putting this into action? And two things I came up with, they apply to me. Maybe they'll ring true for you as well. Firstly, maybe a simple explanation is we're hesitant to put our faith into action because we don't really want to. We don't want to be inconvenienced. Like the idea that our faith could make a difference in the world, but when we realize that that might make our lives look different than we would want, our enthusiasm sometimes wanes. Like, sure, I would 100% say every person deserves a warm place to sleep, a roof over their head, 3 square meals a day. But does that mean I need to open up my home? Does that mean I have to cook more? No, thank you. Suddenly our focus isn't on what James clearly says here, but our focus is on what we want. What's going to make us the most happy. Sometimes I think that putting our faith into action means that our own needs and our own wants are going to take a back seat. And I think the most extreme but good example of this is Jesus in Luke 22 in the Garden of Gethsemane, right? He's facing the ultimate, like, suffering, the ultimate trial of his life, his impending death, and he says, Father, not my will, but yours be done. Not what I want, but whatever you want, let's go with that. And so our faith is proved living and active when we're willing to give up what we want, when we're willing to be inconvenienced for others. Or maybe the second reason is that We're just worried that if we obey God, if we give, if we're living generously like this text says, that we're scared that we're going to not be provided for ourselves, or that we're going to suffer need, because we don't want our actions of faith on behalf of other people to lead to our own suffering. But think of Abraham. He was waiting for this son for years. And in the Bible times, a son was even more important than now. We understand, like, oh, you want a son to carry on your family name. That's a big deal, which was also true back then. And also, sons were expected to take care of their parents when they got older, right? And so Abraham, there was a sense of security and that kind of thing bound up in Isaac. And so God says, hey, I know I promised you this, just give it up. And Abraham, what is his response? He packs it up and they're walking up the mountain and he's getting ready to sacrifice him. And even Isaac is like, wait, Dad, where is the animal for the sacrifice? And Abraham's response is, God will provide. How I read it, it seems like he doesn't even bat an eye, right? He says, hey, God asked me, God's going to provide. So if we can trust God to provide for something like our salvation, if we trust him in our beliefs that, yes, if I say I believe in God, you're going to provide for me for this huge thing that impacts my eternity, then we must also trust him to take care of us when we stretch ourselves in faith to care for other people. So, if we throw out the inconvenience thing, we realize, all right, not my will, but God's will. If we throw out the provision thing and say, okay, I know I can trust God to take care of me, then what is our next action? Well, it'd be easy to say, well, find somebody to give food and find somebody to give clothes. And that's great, do those things. But we have to take it one step further, because James is saying, it's not about the deeds. The deeds don't matter if the heart's not right, right? The deeds are what's showing the life of the faith in the first place. So, first action step for us, check your vital signs, right? Is my faith alive or is my faith dead? Don't just look at our inward spiritual disciplines like reading the Bible or coming to church, but what are the actions that are coming from my heart? Is my faith something that is active every day of my life? Are my beliefs and my actions working together to declare my love for God and my love for my neighbor? Second thing to think about, start praying, not my will, but yours be done. And this is scary, honestly, when I think about this, because when you start praying that, he could ask you to do some pretty difficult things, right? Does anyone really want to spend their hard-earned money on someone else? Or to do an extra load of laundry, or take an extra trip to the grocery store, or inconvenience themselves for the sake of someone else? Probably not. But when we start asking God, what do you want? We often realize that his will is different from ours. While our will usually focuses on our own wants and our own comfort, God's will extends to all of his people. And we know he could accomplish that without any action on our part, right? He could snap his fingers and everyone has food and everyone has clothes and there's no more rockets going off in Israel and Palestine and everything is put right. He could. But that isn't his plan. His plan is to transform us and use us to transform the world. He saves us and sends us out, not to live with our own agenda in mind, but with the kingdom in mind. And in his kingdom, we all have a role to play. And that's what our church mission statement is about, right? When it says we're growing together and being Christ's hands and feet in the world. It's about putting our faith into action for the good of other people and the glory of God. So James is saying that our faith is at its best when it's wearing everyday clothes, when it's willing to do some real work. It's time for us to let our faith work itself out in our hands and our feet, in the things that we do every day. We live out our faith in the way that we're ordering our priority list, the way that we shop, the way that we drive, the way we talk to our neighbors, the way that we spend our money, and the way we invest our free time. Our faith is revealed to be living and useful as we submit our own will to the will of God. And if that seems like a really big job or a really high calling, it's because it totally is. But know that we are not alone as we do that. So let's go to God and pray and ask for his help in this. God, you are good. You are the best. You are the thing that we need the most. And so we thank you for giving us Jesus to be our salvation, that we no longer have to follow the law or count on our own good works to get us to heaven. We just want to thank you for that gift of salvation that you offer to us. I pray that you would give us gratitude for that in a new way, that we wouldn't ever lose sight of that, but that we would count on you for our salvation. But James, in this passage, is telling us that our faith needs to go beyond just that point of salvation and touch every single part of our lives. And so I pray that you would show us what that looks like, that as we submit to you and pray, not my will but yours, that you would breathe life into our faith, that you would give us obedient hearts that are willing to respond to your will. Pray you'd open our eyes to see the needs of the people around us. We want our faith to be living and active, a faith that shows the world who you really are. So God, we ask that you would make this happen in our hearts, that we would be your servants in the world, making your kingdom come. God, not our will, but yours be done. We love you. Help us to love you even more, God. Amen.
Will you please stand and let's respond together through song, Christ Be Our Light.